Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, I'm Therapist Kelly.
Woohoo, I have less than a week and I'm on vacation.
I know, I'm so jealous.
I'm so excited. But you know what? It's perfect timing because the new floors are in.
Yes.
The cats have calmed down.
And now you can...
And now I can focus on the vacation, and there's no taxes to be done. There's nothing like...
I feel like really want you to take me with... seriously, if you were like, Kelly, you know what? Tag along, like, it would happen.
It is a couples only, so we'd have to be a threesome, but that's okay.
Your game. Perfect for our guest today. So, how was Halloween? Tell me everything.
Well, Halloween was very boring in my neighborhood. We had 7 kids.
I can't believe that. That's crazy.
It's so sad for me, because you know how much I adore children and love to see their little cutenesses. But your family was just adorable.
All of our skeletons. Yes.
Pulling out skeletons from the closet,
yeah,
were you?
Exactly. No. This is so funny. I came in with like a limit because, you know, my younger son is like literally addicted to food. Like, I've never seen anything like it, and sugar. So I'm like, all right, you know, London, 3-piece limit. I swear to God, we were in the car from his preschool to home, and he'd already had 4 pieces because I guess they gave out candy. So I'm like, there goes that limit. So like, I don't even know how much he had. All I know is he had a tummy ache when he went to bed, which I figured, and so did my husband. So,
but that's
a
natural consequence, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't think that a 3-piece limit is realistic for a 4-year-old.
I don't think so either. I don't know what I was thinking.
Were they the little ones too?
The fun size.
The fun size.
But my kids, like, that's a crack to them. Like, one fun size is, like, a good hour. So, like, there I am, 3 hours of, like, hyperactivity, you know? So, fuck that. I need to take care of myself, you know?
Did they sleep through the night? Or did
they
wake up?
We gave my younger son melatonin. Like, we planned that shit perfectly.
I thought you were going to say a Xanax.
I wouldn't put it past me. But no, we gave him melatonin, and they didn't sleep through the night. I think, literally, they both woke up, actually. So funny. But anyway, it was a good Halloween.
Well, that event has come and gone, and we need to honor ourselves here. We have done this show for 2 years almost month.
That's
November 1st, 2 years ago.
That's crazy.
We started planning this, and I think, what was our first show, like November 15th?
I think you're right.
We'll have a little cheers in 2 weeks when I'm back.
Yes, exactly. We'll be refreshed. Let's give a little shout out to our sponsor.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Ian Oliver.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of the best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to go visit my website, secondchanceatromance.com, where you can find a link not only to the book, but to lots of articles and interviews that will help you with your dating, relationships, and sex after divorce. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to 2 very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. Go for it. Thank you.
Okay. And we had an awesome guest last week, Fran Drescher, who talked to us about everything about cancer, pretty much.
Yeah. Every time I put on my natural deodorant, I think of her. I'm not kidding.
I know.
Isn't that funny? Like, literally every time. In the pits, Fran Drescher.
Maybe she saved our lives.
Exactly. but it was great. Really interesting stuff.
So any other stories? Because I want to get right into our guest.
Yeah, me too.
Like,
no, I'm so
exciting.
Yes.
Okay. So today we actually have in studio Susanna Brisk, a sexual intuitive. She has such an interesting bio.
Yeah.
Susanna Brisk is a sexual intuitive. She's going to tell us what that is, who helps people discover what they like, what they need, and how to get it. She has written extensively about sex, relationships, love, dating, marriage, divorce, BDSM, and mental health for sexpert.com, yourtango.com, afterparty, blah, lots of other ones. Okay. Some years ago, Brisk found herself living the American dream, Ocean View Malibu home, complete with white picket fence, successful husband, and Irish twin sons, yet even pursuing her passions of writing, acting, and comedy, found herself increasingly depressed. She was on multiple psych meds and in therapy, but her mental health was deteriorating. As her marriage disintegrated, a renewed flow of sexual energy awakened to heal both herself and others. We are going to welcome Susanna brisk, the fearless, sometimes outrageous, always engaging media personality and broadcaster. Welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me. Oh my God. I became a little aroused hearing you
about the threesome.
Read my story. Oh. I was like, wow, that person sounds really dynamic.
Yes, she does, and she is, and she's here in the flesh.
Yeah. In the flesh, yes.
Just right off the bat, what is, I want to hear more about your history too, because it sounds like you
so
went
cool.
through a really, really interesting path, but what is a sexual intuitive?
I would describe it as helping people tap into their own sexual intuition. So a person could be a sexpert and tell you all kinds of tips and tricks and ideas, but really it's going to be up to you to really look deep inside. Everything I say is now going to sound like
sexual.
An innuendo.
Of course.
And really figure out, like, what is it that you're into? And then, only then, once you figure out what you're into, then you can go about communicating it. But most people, for some reason unknown to me, do not spend every waking hour thinking about sex. And for those people, that they need a little bit of guidance to start to get into that conversation with themselves about what are my needs exactly, and not to argue with your needs. And then once you're at that point, then you can communicate. Then you can figure out, okay, how do we get those needs met?
So are you also like an intuitive, so you can kind of figure out what they want if they don't know?
I'm very intuitive, bordering on psychic. However, yeah. I would never presume to tell somebody, like, you know, well, sometimes I'll do it as a party trick when I first meet somebody. I'll be like, uh-huh. But if I have a session with somebody, I'm not going to sit down on the first day and be like, you know, I think you're really going to be into this.
Yeah.
It's more, I have an intuition about where I think their sexuality maybe lies. Mm-hmm. And then we will gradually unpick all the little threads, you know, on the sweater. And sometimes I will tell you, when the sweater unravels, it's not fun in a way. I mean, I try to make it fun, and of course it's sex, so it is fun, because the idea that you're actually going to be sexually fulfilled is such a foreign idea for most people, mm-hmm. that part of it is fun. But the process is messy.
And what makes it messy? Like what can people, well, like sexual assaults in somebody's history, things like that, sexual abuse or...
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing with that. I send people to therapy. I do send people to therapy because my expertise is not to unravel something that happened 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But what I do believe is that it's possible to, by not pathologizing your fetishes, yeah. your desires, your deepest, weirdest kinks, mm-hmm. or even if it's not like a deep, weird kink, maybe it's just like you want a little bit more sex or you want a different kind of sex. If we don't pathologize those things, it's actually possible to make a really big breakthrough and a really big transformation pretty quickly, mm-hmm. if you have somebody to hold space for you. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I do. I mean, I feel like if we were in the olden times, I might be the good witch in the village, you know, yeah. that you go and see, because I've always been like that. I mean, mm-hmm. Kelly, we've known each other for
yes.
a long time. And even, you know, when I was doing my show in 2008, I've always been the person that people come to with their sex stuff. I've always uh-huh. been the person who people go, I mean, now we have iPhones, so I literally have people show me there. Hey, want to see me squirting?
Like, wow.
I'm like, yeah, sure. Good for you. Thanks for sharing. We just met, but okay.
Like they just feel an instant comfort.
Yeah. So I think I've always been like that because it's pretty obvious that I don't have any judgment.
Mm-hmm. It's that fiery red hair of yours.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They say a lot of things about redheads.
They really do.
They do.
They really do.
What's the top three that
well,
you get?
I'll tell you something interesting. If you went to a BDSM club, and I say BDSM a lot, and sometimes I say it really fast, so it sounds like I'm saying BDSM. People go, what are you saying? Are you speaking Russian now? What is that? Bondage, discipline, dominance, submission, sadism, masochism.
Wow.
So, all of the above. So if you go to a club, you will find that almost 50% of the women at the club will have red hair.
Interesting.
No. I can guarantee it.
Really?
Shut
yeah.
up.
Because there's something about, first of all, we're more thermally sensitive,
oh.
which means we're also all around more sensitive. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, they did studies and found out that redheads also transfer pleasure to pain more frequently than anybody else with any other hair color.
This is so,
so fascinating.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. But it's what's interesting, too, is that we also have kind of a, some of us have kind of a low pain threshold because of that sensitivity. But at the same time, if you,
you can
get in that little comfort zone of the pleasure pain
zone.
But again, what I do is not about like, oh, you have to be like swinging from the rafters and into clown porn. It's like, it's not, everybody doesn't have to have like the most way out sexuality. Just the idea that you could be in a relationship with somebody and be connecting with them sexually on a regular basis, and how fantastic that is for your relationship, for your health, for your skin, for your children's health, for just everything about it is positive. And yet, unfortunately, if you even Google the word sex, but beyond finding porn, what you find is the pathologizing, always the sex. It's addiction. It's how to channel it into another area, how to stop being obsessed with someone. It's like, why do we have to stop being obsessed with somebody? I mean, I know that, like, okay, if you're not functioning and you've got some major problems going on, that's one thing. But a lot of the time, I feel like what we've been taught is like, okay, I met you. Oh, I'm really attracted to you. I should run in the other direction. No, you should marry that person because you're going to need that kind of chemistry when you're looking over at them, over that car seat and over that human throw up.
Exactly.
And you're going to need that.
Right. Right.
So, you know, start out ahead of the game and start out with the sexual connection. But of course, very few people know how to maintain that.
Do you see a lot of cultural differences in terms of how people grow to appreciate or unappreciate their sexuality?
That's an interesting question. Do you mean in terms of growing up in Australia, being from the former Soviet Union, living in New York, living in LA?
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, like, is, you know, the European culture truly more sexually expressive?
Oh, 1,000%.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because my kids' friends come over to our house, and I don't have, like, you know, open vulvas hanging on the wall or anything, but, you know, I have art, and there's, you know, naked women, and the boys go, why are there boobs on the wall? And I go, we're European.
Right.
The body's a beautiful thing. That's a boob. Get over it. It's fine.
This is so funny.
Right? And so I feel like in America, it's like, either we're going to be Puritans, and we're just going to be, like, on the outside Puritans, and then on the flip side of that, because when you deny the expression of your sexual energy, it gets twisted into other things.
Yeah, sure.
And so then on the other hand, you have this like incredibly dark, like, and then porn becomes like this terrible, dark, dirty secret. It's like, no, it's all part of the same sexual stew. And in fact, whatever sexualstew.com, I'm GoDaddying it right now as we speak. If you find out, this is one of the thing also that's so fascinating when I work with people, right? I can be like, so what kind of porn do you watch? And they're like, well, I go, well, you know, there's a tag word. So tell me what tag words you search for. And it's like people think that that takes place in like a parallel dimension in another universe. It's like, no, just because you're using a private browser, it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And then it doesn't mean also that everything that you watch in porn is stuff you want to enact.
Sure.
Some stuff is totally about fantasy.
Right.
However, it will give you a clue about something that's missing in your life, missing in your relationship, or that you would like to attract in a partner. And then so once you, but you have to accept it first. You have to like understand first, okay, this is okay.
Right.
You know, this is okay. And there's a lot of quote unquote, you know, good porn out there right now. There's a lot of what we call, you know, the slow food movement.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Well, the slow food movement is basically like juicing or.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Food that takes a long time. It's the difference between fast food and slow food,
okay.
Right? So it's better for you. It's more nutritious. It has more enriching qualities to it. So there is porn now that has those same qualities.
Slow porn.
Yeah, slow porn, or we call it conscious porn. And there's
That's
a lot. Yeah, and a lot of it's coming out of Europe, of course, because to get back to your question, yes, the Europeans understand how it's done. The only thing is, what's interesting is that in somewhere in a country like France, for example, it's very common for a couple to be married, and then they just kind of have things on the side, like monogamish is like the norm that's over so there. Now, I don't know if I generally counsel, like my thing generally is that you're authentic.
Right.
And, you know, it's like I could have stayed in my marriage.
Right.
And my mother's like, why can't you just lie like everybody else? Right. Oh, I'm sorry I couldn't lie and cheat. I'm sorry you brought me up to be honest. So to me, I really, the ultimate thing is like, just be authentic. Just be authentic about what you want and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if the other person really says to you genuinely, I don't want to know.
Right.
You're free to do whatever and I don't want to know. That's fine, because that's honest communication. But this whole thing of like living double life, mm-hmm. I don't know who has the strength and the stomach for it, but I would never counsel somebody in that direction.
Well, it's so unhealthy. I mean,
and I don't even have time to like wipe my own ass, let alone like have another affair. I mean, right now, so like, I don't know how people have like time to do this.
And
you know?
Sustaining one relationship
is hard
so
enough.
Difficult.
So funny.
Yeah,
right?
But that's the thing with polyamory, which, by the way, works for a lot of people. And I don't have any moral judgment about non-monogamy polyamory. Mm-hmm. I think it can definitely be a solution for some people. But the thing is that if you're maintaining a really honest, high-level, functioning, engaged relationship with several people, like, that's a lot.
Right. That's a lot.
It's not the
retired.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's a full-time job.
Yes.
Yeah. But some people, you know, that's interesting in the poly community, is some people, the way that they see it is like, well, if I get, you know, Steve, who's got a ponytail and is really sensitive and can take me to art galleries, and then I've got Tony, I play tennis with him and go, you know, whatever it is, like bike riding with him, and then there's this guy, and between the three of them I have one complete man. Well,
right.
I don't know if life really works that way.
That's really, really, really fascinating.
Certainly a fantasy of many people, though,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I'm thinking about them right now. Steve and Tony.
Exactly.
If you're listening.
So are you currently in a relationship now?
I am in a relationship, yeah.
What did you notice from your marriage? You said that you got very depressed. Was it just a stifling environment, or what? Oh, she snorted. I like that.
I'm a snorter. I'm a snorter. It's one of my fetishes. No, not really. It has to be a fetish for someone who's with me. I said to my boyfriend when I met him, I hope you have a fetish for watching women cry, because I'm very emotional. Mm-hmm. And the big thing is that I was very happily married for many, many years, and mm-hmm. Kelly knows that.
Yeah.
And, you know, my ex-husband's a wonderful man, and I have no desire to throw him under the bus. Mm-hmm. But I do, and also the difference between what I do and what you guys do is that I'm not a therapist, I'm not mm-hmm. a doctor. So because I'm more like a coach, I can bring examples from my own life if I feel they're relevant.
Sure.
So I think what's relevant to this discussion that I would be willing to bring in from my personal life is that I was taking a lot of psych meds mm-hmm. over a number of years, mainly because I was a depressive and I was very, very, very emotional and moody. And rather than try to get underneath that and mm-hmm. understand, and again, this is not I'm not railing against psych meds.
Sure.
I'm not
we understand. Yeah.
Right.
Just your personal experience.
Right.
Yes.
But just for people listening, I'm not saying like, hey, throw out
your
meds.
Because
said, yeah. But I do think that because it's been almost 3 years since I detoxed off all those medications, and I never would have thought in my entire life that I would be able to live that way. I was just like, well, I'm going to have to take these forever. And I do definitely have an emotional state that has to be managed over time, the way that you would manage something like diabetes. I do mm-hmm. feel that there's like a chronic pattern of negativity that happened from, you know, from when I was a child and different things that happened, which I think most people have. But rather than pathologizing that and making it be like, well, there's something wrong with that. Okay, well, I cry every day. That's part of who I am, right? And so the one area, though, that I don't have any compunctions or any kind of shame or any sense that, oh, maybe this is not right, is sex. But because I have those, I have areas in my life that are like shameful or difficult, mm-hmm. I have that empathy. to be like, okay, I understand why this is difficult for you. I understand why it's not so easy to just come to your partner and be like, you know what? I've never had an orgasm. I've been faking him the entire time. Or I don't know how to get you to have sex with me more.
Yeah.
Or I have this one thing that I just, that is like, I've been fantasizing about it since I was seven and I've never told you about it. Mm. Or I've told you and I haven't made you understand how important it is to me. So those are really difficult things. That's not stuff that I'm going to resolve in an hour.
Sure,
of course.
And help people resolve in an hour. But at the same time, I do believe it's possible. And I see so many people who've taken their marbles and gone home. They're still in the relationship, but their energy is not there because their energy is either with another person who they're cheating with or their energy is electronically. I'm just going to go off, watch the porn, get the 20 to, you know, 6 minute, 3 minute, 20 minute orgasm, however long it takes you, depending on if you're...
It's about 4 seconds for most men. Yeah, exactly.
I think it really varies.
I'm teasing.
No, but it's interesting, isn't it? I think it's really interesting about how good... I can swear, right?
Yes.
Not really swearing. Yeah, I heard you say fuck before. I was like, oh, thank God. I think what's really interesting is how much of a brain, heart, dick connection most men have.
Oh, really?
Brainheartdick.com. There's another.
There
See,
you go.
We're just
Perfect.
Spitting out these ideas. and same with for women, right? Mm-hmm. Brain, heart, pussy. And I think it's not been what people think it is. Like, people think that if a man loves a woman, for example, right, that he's more likely to want to have sex with her. Sometimes, not at all.
Right.
Sometimes, much less likely. Sometimes, the person that you've been with for the longest, who you have to brush your teeth next to them the next day, it's much, much harder to get over all of that baggage and get your needs met.
So I have a question about married couples.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the myths about their sex life.
Are you
like
married,
that.
Deborah?
I've been with the same guy for 8 years. We're spiritually married, just not legally married.
Okay, lovely.
Yeah. Lovely. I don't believe so much in the whole marriage thing. Not
the piece
my
of
age
paper and, for the government?
Yeah. I mean, I'm very pro-marriage for anybody who's interested, but for me personally, it just makes more sense. We say our commitments every day, and actually today is our 8th year anniversary.
Oh, is
oh,
it?
That's
oh, congrats.
Adorable.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Wow.
So it is.
November 1st.
So it shall be.
Yeah.
That was when he proposed to me. So it was the spiritual proposal.
Oh, that's so cool.
Wow. So even more important to say, when we say married couples, we mean people in a committed relationship.
Exactly. That makes sense.
Because there are really increasing people who don't see the need for the piece of paper. And again, we don't judge either way. So, yeah. So go ahead. Tell me about couples
so,
and relationships.
Okay, so tell me about most married couples. Do they have good sex life? How often? I want to know the statistics.
Well, my poll is unscientific.
Okay,
First of all, I lived in Malibu for a long time, so you're going to get a little cross-section of all the sexless marriages in Malibu.
That's so funny.
But
with all the Botox.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know, those two things may or may not be related. but the thing is that what's normal is the thing that's arguable. I mean, how can there be a subjective norm?
It's true.
Objective, rather, norm about what's normal in a relationship. The thing is, if two people have very little interest in sex, I mean, they're just not interested, we don't have a problem.
Right.
Sure.
You have two people who are asexual or what we call demisexual or gray sexual. They can stay in their best friend relationship forever and be perfect partners.
And be content.
However, the majority of the time, that's not the case. The majority of the time, you have a case of mismatched sex drive. One person wants it more than the other person. And whether that's the man or the woman is also something that I think is a great misconception.
Sure.
I mean, haven't you gotten hornier as you got older?
So funny. You know, to me, it just goes in waves, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But I've also been more stressed with my kids, so that takes a toll, too.
Yeah, it does.
You know, so it's hard to say.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think the stressors are valid. You know, kids will, you know, they're little cock blockers. They'll just...
That's another .com.
They'll just kill your vibe every single time. The job, the money, the stress
Sure.
is... But
resentment. I think
resentment is the number one. I have something in my queue that I'm about to say, which is the number one reason couples stop having sex.
Is resentment.
And I don't want to ruin the ending, but that is.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because even the resentment towards yourself, mm-hmm. like how many women do you know who are like, oh, I've put on weight.
Yeah.
I don't want to. It's like, I'm sorry, do you have to be a size 6 Instagram model to enjoy, to get your pleasure? Yeah. Like if.
Right.
I mean, it just seems like such a horrible thing, but we do impose mm-hmm. that on ourselves, you know?
Sure.
And men, I've known men who are like, oh, I feel fat, and they didn't want to have sex.
Yeah.
So
right. So yeah.
So what's not? I don't know what's, you know, what's normal is what's normal for you.
Right.
And if one person is like climbing the walls, going crazy, feeling like they're just never going to get their needs met, mm-hmm. and the other person is feeling pressured or pushed, you know, that's not. It's like that says more to me about, you know, how many actual times physically it happens.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the time in relationships, too, it needs to be redefined. Like, what do you define as sex? Like, I put these, like, I'm wearing a leopard print stockings today.
So cute.
So I feel like, to me, like, I put these on and it's like sex.
You're having sex.
Yeah,
right, exactly. On our show.
In the studio.
Did we know that?
Right, wherever I am. Because it's the, most people don't have a profound sensual relationship with themselves.
Yes.
So when you say to me it comes in waves,
yeah.
I would always say to you, what is your relationship with yourself as a sexual
right.
being? And
sure.
that is what comes in waves. Mm-hmm. And then add on top of that, you know, the fact all those times last week he didn't bring the trash in
right.
and all those other things, then
sure.
it's complicated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and
mm-hmm.
also, you know, menopause
yes.
really
yeah.
does have, it changes things. I mean, it certainly did for me.
Yeah.
It's been hard, actually. Sometimes it's been very frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating because the physical changes mm-hmm. That happen with menopause. I talk to a lot of women who will grab me, you know, at the baseball game and be like, I don't understand. Sex started hurting now. It never hurt before. And I say, well, go, first of all, get the physical causes checked out. So go to the doctor, figure out what can be balanced out with hormones, bioidentical hormones, et cetera. However, there's two things. First of all, we need to stop associating wetness and hardness as predicators of arousal.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
So what happens yeah. is that if you get to a certain age or after you've had kids or certain times of the month or you're ovulating or you're dehydrated, for God's sake,
mm-hmm.
and the equipment is not working the way you think it should work, and then it's where you go with that, what mm. you turn that into.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many great lubricants on the market, by the way, that and there's just all these weird mental blocks about it. Like, oh, I don't want, you know, it's not natural or
right.
it's not whatever. It's like, no, it's very, very good because whatever helps you connect.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, is it leopard print stockings? You know, like what is it? Whatever it is, for me, there's nothing that too much.
Right.
But that's because sex is a high priority for me.
Right.
But for people for whom it's not a high priority, although you'd be surprised, I tell you, a lot of people that I talk to are just so frustrated because I think it's just a very frustrating and terrible feeling when you feel like, well, it's just never going to happen and this is just how it's going to be.
Sure. And like just thinking that this is as good as it gets, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that's my main thing in life is to say, yes, there are difficulties and menopause is a big difficulty and perimenopause and after childbirth and then for men falling testosterone, huge,
yes.
huge.
Yes.
The low T is mm-hmm. huge. But I really want to say to people, there is hope. There is absolutely hope. And for me, what I found and what I believe and what I teach people is because sex doesn't happen on a physical level.
Right.
It's mental.
Yeah.
It's, to
emotional.
Me, energetic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting.
So, I mean, I don't want to get too woo-woo. I have lived in L.A. for a while, and I'm aware that not everybody's in Los Angeles and crunchy and woo-woo as we
right.
are. But there is so much evidence that says that energy, which, by the way, those of us who are more intuitive, were mm-hmm. always aware that everybody had their own energy, and then science finally proved it.
Right.
So just because it hasn't been proven yet that there is something called sexual energy, we've all felt it.
Sure.
We've all felt like, what is attraction? Yeah. And so I feel like when you delve more into that, when you understand more what kind of energies are at play in your relationship and what kind of energies you're attracted to, it's a much more empowering place to start than from the physical of like, well, let me read yet another Cosmo tips and tricks guide for how to give my man the perfect blowjob. Exactly.
And on that note, though, we must hear from our sponsors.
Hello, this is Ian Oliver, author of the best-selling book, Getting Back on Top, encouraging you to consider using my relationship consulting services where I help people transition from being married to divorced to single, one of the most difficult transitions in life. You can check out some of this information on my website, secondchanceatromance.com. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them. And I look forward to working with you. Thank you.
All right. We are talking to Susanna Brisk, a sexual intuitive. And it would be great if you could give our listeners some tips, speaking of not the Cosmo tips, but more tips about how somebody might start to awaken some of their sensuality or their sexual energy if it has become relatively dormant. Do you recommend masturbating, fantasizing?
I always recommend masturbating and fantasizing, but I also recommend, I teach workshops, and the workshops I teach to me are very different to what's out there. And the next one I'm teaching is in Malibu. It's called 10 Energies, and you can find out about it on 10energies.com. 10 Energies That Will Spark Your Sex Life. So what I found is that there are 10 different, because it's always 10, sexual energies that, whether giving or getting, are completely their own preference and response. So if you're into a certain energy, for example, let's say, for example, okay, here's the first one that I talk about, okay? And yes, of course, and this goes as well to getting in touch with your own sexuality, because It's like you've just asked me this huge subject, and I'm like, where to start? I need 3 hours.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. No, for 3 hours, you can come to the thing. Actually, 2 hours. But, okay, so the first energy that I teach, that I talk about, is the pleasing energy. And this, by the way, is the one that most people stay in.
Yes.
So you get in, with somebody, right? Yeah. You fall in love with somebody, or you're just on a hookup with somebody, or whatever it is, and you're like, I'm going to please them in bed. I'm going to please them sexually, and then when I'm done pleasing them, they're going to please me,
right?
Or we're going to please each other at the same time. It's fine. It's fabulous. It's a little limited because when you're done pleasing people, what do you do first of all if one of the people is a people pleaser?
Yeah.
Then they're just got like the woman who's had the guy goes down on her, and like 45 minutes later, it's still not happening.
Right.
And so what is she going to do? She's either going to say, okay, it's not happening today, honey. Or she's just going to fake it to please him. Or a lot of other really kind of twisted stuff can happen out of that. If people don't even communicate about it.
Yeah.
Like the guy goes down, he's trying to please her, and then it doesn't happen. Nothing's ever said. And then in his mind, he goes, I'm never going to be able to please her.
Mm. Right.
And then from then on, then you've created already a sex problem, just in like one little interaction.
Sure.
So if you're aware that, for example, if someone going down, like for, okay, I'm going to be personal now, okay? If someone is going down on me and trying to please me, I will literally never come. And I'm somebody who can think off. I can have an orgasm without touching myself. Not bragging, bragging a little bit. The point is, I'm highly orgasmic. That will never arouse me in a million years for whatever reason. Now, I don't have to ask myself why. I don't have to think about whether daddy spanked me when I was 7. Like, it doesn't matter why. It's just stuff to know about yourself.
Sure.
So what energy might be arousing to me personally, and maybe to somebody's listening? What if somebody's worshiping you? They're going down on you. The acts, the physical act is the same. The mechanics are the same, but they're worshiping you. there's a lot of people who have huge fantasies about that, and they don't recognize that that's what it is that's turning them on. Like, they might watch porn, they might read a bodice ripper kind of book, they might watch a movie, they're getting aroused, they don't know why. Maybe there's that energy of worship, that's what they want. Now, how are you going to turn to someone between Seth Meyers and America's Got Talent and say, honey, can you worship my pussy later? Well, some of us can do that. Some of us have been taught those kinds of communication skills. But for most people, it's like then you have to embark on a process to say, honey, I need to talk to you about some of the things that turn me on. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I teach. It's very custom. It's very much like your own blueprint for sexuality. Two people do not have the same sexuality, although my boyfriend and I are pretty close. But a lot of, you know, there are people you can have a matching sexuality and you can work on it. It's something that you can work on. Mm-hmm. I mean, if one person is completely asexual and one person wants to have sex every day, the only thing I would have said is, why didn't you discuss this before you got married? Like, did you give this any thought? Did you think about what would happen 10 years down the line when this person is crawling up the walls and the other person is thinks everything's perfectly fine?
Right.
So communication, but not always that easy, is it?
No.
And you can communicate energetically in a lot of different ways. Again, once you start to train your own sexual intuition, that aroused me. I wonder why that turned me on. What was it about that that turned me on? And then you share it with your partner or your date or your hookup or your third non-primary, non-binary, non-gender identified person. And because it's for everybody.
Right.
You know, it's not like, you have to, again, I don't think there's anything that upsets me more than hearing women say, I've put on weight and I just don't feel sexy. Mm-hmm. I just want to be like, no, honey.
Right.
Please. Because energy doesn't put on weight. And again, if you're in touch with that, your own sexual energy, it's not that those body issues aren't going to be there as soon as you get out of bed. You can just put them right back on like a badly fitting pair of trousers once you get out of bed. But to learn how to put that aside and be like, you know what, this is the time now, and the time is for connection. And some of us, you know, are afraid of that intimacy and connection.
Yes, I agree.
And then where it comes out is in the sexual.
Sure.
Because you want to keep it surface. It's like it's so vulnerable to really go that deep with somebody. And
yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
So how often do you have sex with your husband?
She like throws it out there.
Well,
here's the deal. I always promised my husband that I would never talk about him personally. So I can't go there because he's much more private. I'm much more like kind of, you know, people ask me a question, but I will respect his privacy. But I mean, I'd say on average, I think my friends, like who I talk to, who are married long term, like 10 years or more, it's probably like once every 2 weeks.
Yes.
Maybe.
I would agree that that's like a norm.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't think that's enough.
Right.
And neither do the relationship experts, the sex experts. I mean, if you're both happy with it, that's fine. But I actually think that we can do better as a society. My gosh, look at what we've been given, you know?
Yeah.
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 But I'd like to add, too, though, that I mean, I know we're talking purely about sex, but there's something also that can be very arousing and doesn't have to turn into orgasm or sex. It's just that connection when you're really intimate with somebody affectionately, romantically, just really just being attuned with their energy and sensitively.
So not the physical act.
That
you're
not
saying,
necessarily
yeah.
being sexual, that I think counts for a lot for me. Actually,
1,000%, and that's why I gave the example of putting on the stockings, which is a little bit flip. But really, what I said was we want to reclassify our idea of sex as this one, first of all, heterosexual act of penetration. It's like that's not what sex is. Sex can be a touch, a look, a
That's interesting.
Brushing against each other, you know, when you're making breakfast and the kids are on the doing their thing, or you're on the phone and the clients and whatever, and you just have that moment of connection and intimacy, and it's sexual. And that's why there are different kinds of attraction too. There's genital attraction, which is one thing, which is when everything just goes into high alert. But there's a lot of different kinds of attraction. But again, unless you're in touch with it, you're going to miss it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, yes, those things are important. But as I said, I think that a lot of people are afraid of the intimacy that that entails. And when you keep things surface in a relationship and it becomes about the logistics of who's going to take the kids to soccer and how are we going to manage aspects of our timetable.
Sure.
So a lot of people seem like they might be just comfortable that way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I also know a lot of women who, I don't want to say withhold sex, but they don't want to go there because they feel scared in the relationship in terms of sharing that kind of vulnerability and then having, let's say, an angry comment come their way later on or be teased about something and then feel like bad about themselves. And so that protective wall can start to grow over the years because you just don't trust that you're going to be safe with your partner.
So true.
That's interesting.
The safety issue is so important. And the thing is that you might be attracted to an unsafe energy in bed, right? For example, something that's very taboo, but a lot of women have is a rape fantasy, right?
Yeah.
However, you have to feel so safe with somebody. And there has to be so much consent and so much understanding of what this is. What are we dabbling in here? What are we getting into? And what is this, the intention of, for example, that particular act? That's very different to feeling unsafe in a relationship. When you feel unsafe in a relationship, of course, why would you have sex with somebody you didn't feel safe with?
Right.
But that doesn't mean that you can. This is the thing that I think people miss. People see sex as like separate, as like this is the rest of our relationship that happens and all of the day-to-day, la, la, la.
Right.
And then there's the sex part and it's separate. It's like, no, it's one big energy system. And so sometimes if you can work with somebody, and this is why I also work with couples, but both people have to be willing, which is very
tough.
Difficult sometimes, especially, I'm going to say especially to get, well, no, it's not. I've seen it across the line both times. The man will say to me, I want to do it, but my wife's just not, there's no way she'd do this. Or the wife will say the same thing about her husband. But there is a way to bring more safety in the relationship through the sexual. But that's something that I know I can help people do and guide people towards, but it's when you're very right when you say that. It's like if you don't like someone, why would you want to fuck them?
Right.
And if somebody has made you feel bad after you were vulnerable with them, it is very difficult and almost foolhardy to then turn around and be like, well, let me show you my vulnerability again, right?
Right.
But it's interesting because a lot of couples have makeup sex, right? They have these hard fights and then they want to have sex because there's something arousing, I think, about the anger and
the
all that. But I know for me, that's just not appealing.
Well, I do believe that things can be resolved in the sexual arena much more than the therapists give credit for. I do think, I mean, if you're in some kind of like a toxic situation where somebody's abusing you and, you know, obviously that's not what I'm advocating. However, if you have this fight fuck thing going in your
fightfuck.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Another one.
Fight, fuck. I'm sure that exists.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a lot of adrenaline to me. I mean, it's like, if you can handle those levels of adrenaline, then have at it. I mean, hopefully, you know, the thing that's interesting is that when you're annoyed with somebody, okay, and I see this in my relationship, when you're annoyed with somebody, there can be something, if you tune into it, that's kind of arousing about it. It's like, and I feel like a lot of women, again, it's not men or women, it's across the board. It's like you see somebody and you go, why are they doing it that way? Why are they always doing it that way? That's not the way to do it, right?
Sure.
And then there's a part of you that's like, you know, they're doing it their way and that's kind of hot.
Right.
It's like you know, for a man, like when you look at a man and you go, okay, that's a man. Like, I can't make him do anything. I can't manipulate him into doing something. Now, rather than that turning into, well, I am so mad at him, I'm going to withhold sex now. It's like, why don't you really tune in about what that says about you, mm-hmm. and A, how controlling we get sometimes.
Sure.
And realize that those, it's like when I was performing, right?
Yeah.
And when you get stage fright when you're performing, and you're encouraged to just think of it as excitement.
Right.
Because fear and excitement, very similar physiological response, mm-hmm. as well. So think about that next time you're annoyed at your partner.
That's it's a like, really interesting take. Yeah, sure.
Is this like, could I be aroused
right
by
now?
This? And how much more positive is that? Rather than, again, seeing as, oh, my God, something's wrong. We should get along all the mm-hmm. time. And why am I so angry at him? Well, you know what? You might be really angry at your partner. And it might be okay if you, instead of what, you know, a discussion is very good and communication is very important. But sometimes having a sexual encounter is very effective.
So funny. Next time, like, my husband doesn't do the dishes, it's like,
I'm gonna try
to look at him like, ooh, you know,
that's
it's like
hot.
So funny, you know.
Well, think about, I mean, if you even think that specific example of the very, you know, mundane household kind of tasks, like that's a really great example, because you can be like, well, do you want to be with a woman? Because I bet if you were with a woman, she would do the dishes all the time because she wouldn't like the mess either. Although I know a lot of slobby women too, so we're not going to generalize. But I'm just saying, it's like you highlight the differences between you.
Right.
Whether you're in a female-female or a male-male relationship, whatever relationship you're in, you highlight the differences and you get aroused by the differences as opposed to, again, pathologizing or making it wrong.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Wow. So, and when is this workshop, by the way? What's the date?
That's November 19th, the
one
in Malibu. But if you go to 10energies.com, that's always when I have my latest workshops. And also, if you go to sexualintuitive.com and sign up for my mailing list, I will send you all my pieces that I write. And my site is actually Real Sex Daily.
Okay.
RealSexDaily.com, where I just basically would like to change the way that people think about sex.
I love that.
And people feel about it and intuit about it. And like you said, change that narrow definition of it as well and make it something much more inclusive.
Okay, hang on, because we want to hear a few closing thoughts from you. And
I'm hanging.
Hang in there, baby. Yeah. Okay, and now let's thank our sponsor, Ian.
Are you frustrated by the tremendous challenges that so many millions of people face in your dating life? If you are, we have your solution. Come talk to me, Ian Oliver, author of best-selling book Getting Back on Top, and my website, secondchanceatromance.com. We can help you. And remember, all of the profits from our activities go to two very important children-related charities, so it's all going to a great cause, helping you and helping them.
Okay, we're back with Susanna Brisk. Where are you actually from?
She's from Australia initially, but then Europe, and like your parents are from Europe, yes?
I was born in Estonia in the former
Soviet Union.
Yeah.
My mother was Estonian.
Stop it. Baltic.
Oh my gosh.
Baltic ladies unite.
Wow. I've never met another Estonian
that wasn't part of
my family.
Wait, but then when did you go to Australia?
I know another one. She lives in the valley.
How awesome.
Yes. The Estonian women, by the way, are something.
My God, this is so interesting.
We'll just stick with that. There's something.
There's something. Those are the strongest women on the planet. That's not exactly my genetic stock because I'm a Russian Jew, but the Estonian women are formidable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nothing keeps them down.
Oh, yeah.
That's so funny.
Amazing.
But then when did you move to Australia?
So I left. We left the former Soviet Union. My father's from the Ukraine, which was still then also the Soviet Union. And we left when I was like 3 years old. We went through Italy for a year, 9 months, and then landed in Melbourne, Australia. But Russian was my first language.
Got it.
And I just think that the Europeans are a lot more circumspect about sex. It's kind of like, it's like if you said to somebody you wanted to deny yourself sex, it'd be like denying yourself oxygen.
All right. Well, hopefully we've gotten our audience completely horny and they'll all have great sex tonight.
And if not, email me, sexualintuitive@gmail.com.
Exactly. Yeah, give us all your info again one more time for our listeners.
RealSexDaily.com is where you can read about all the entertaining shenanigans. Okay. And just email me, sexualintuitive@gmail.com, and let me know your question. I'm happy to chat with somebody for 10 minutes on Skype, free of charge.
Nice.
And if I honestly think that I can help somebody, I will. You know, right. I will say so, because it's a passion and a calling. And yes, get fucking, people.
Thank you so much. That was Susanna Brisk. So, so wonderful to hear. And next week, you will be gone.
I will be gone.
We will be having this
with our sponsor,
exactly,
actually.
Our guest host.
Ian Oliver will be coming in.
Yes, and we'll also have Terry Riau, who is a couples expert. So that would be really cool. Thank you so much
awesome.
For listening.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.